Crab Feast. You know what it's all about.
This is the Crab Feast. I'm yelling, fuck that. You ain't gotta ask me, cause you can trust that. Every Tuesday, you already knew though. Ryan Sickler, soccer star, JUCO. Above ground, cool goes better than most. Jay Larson, self-diagnosed. Go down low this week, last week. Here we go again, fuck the Crab Feast.
It's the job.
Welcome back to the Crab Feast, y'all. Another Tuesday.
Not a Crab Feast for that ass. Well done, Jay.
I knew you'd be impressed,
Sickle. One of the longest you've done in a while there.
Went to the gym this morning, son. 6 a.m.,
like it,
baby.
You're there just,
6 a.m. You're
sitting there touching pitches in the...
That's it. I was just on the treadmill, a 4.0 incline, just touching pitches.
Titching pitches?
I got some looks.
Good to titch your putch, Jay Larson.
Good to pee all you as well, Sickle Cell. What's up, everybody? Great to be here with you on another Tuesday. And jlarsoncomedy.com is my website, and everything else, Jay Larson Comedy on social media. I want to say thanks first. I'm sure you're going to, too. We had a fantastic time up in Petaluma over the weekend. Great live podcast with
awesome.
Some great guests, Kate Willett and Rory Scovell. how fun was that up there, man?
It was so much. I was telling Jay and Dominic and Matthew, everyone that was involved was fantastic. And congrats to all of you for coming out and supporting your local festival, especially year one. That was fantastic.
Year one, man.
Guys wearing your gear, out there chanting, having a good time. It was a pleasure to meet all
great
of you after
venue.
The show.
The best thing was that venue, you would have thought it was midnight outside. How dark. It was just like you were like in...
It did not feel like it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
No. We had a great time up there in Petaluma at the Petaluma
Packed
Comedy
it out.
Festival.
I was blown away. There are that many Crab Feast fans that far north of San Francisco.
A lot of you guys don't know this, but Rye said to me earlier off mic, he's like, you know, when we got up, I turned around and looked at the audience and like we're getting a standing ovation. Because I remember like when we walked off and we closed the curtain, Rye fell to a knee and was emotional. And I was like, what the fuck's going on with Sickle? And then now I know why. So great to be up there with you guys, as always. And I'll be coming out on the road. I've said it to you before. Tons of dates all going up as the ticket links come in on my website. Coming out to a bunch of places. Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, St. Louis just recently added. Atlanta recently added. Boston, D.C., Philly, New York. Tons of places. They're going to be all available on my website. I'll be making announcements soon through social media with a fresh poster. So I hope to see you guys out. And then this Saturday, American Comedy Company in San Diego. I'll be there for two shows only Saturday night. That's going to be right after the Home Run Derby.
The Home Run Derby, so, that's this weekend.
Some updates on the Home Run Derby. Getting a field and filming permits in Los Angeles, not the easiest thing.
It's insane.
We've had two fields on lock that we had to walk away from. One, because they were charging us $30,000 to film that. the other, because the Archdiocese...
I mean, I love y'all, but I don't love 30K.
Come on, man. And then the other, the Archdiocese isn't going to have enough time. I guess they need to figure out where they can ship off their priest to
They got their own problems going on right now, these motherfuckers.
They can't get to our request
Good
for a field.
Lord.
So we're working on a field, and we think we're going to be able to get something locked in. So for any of you people that are local, what we're going to do is we're going to send an update podcast.
That's right. It'll pop up in your feed this week. We'll announce the specific field here in Los Angeles.
And we'll
if you're coming from out of town into LA anyway, you know, we're going to do it. We'll put it all on our social media and everything so you know where it'll be. But that's how we're going to have to update.
It's the way it's going to have to go. We picked the date. We're sticking to it.
We have to, because we also have a lot of people involved that lined up that are some nice, fun surprises and stuff like
nice,
that.
Nice, fun
surprises. Be real nice, guys. And I, as always, I want to thank my sponsor for the Home Run Derby, Topps. Man, those baseball cards you guys made for me are fucking sick. They're absolutely... I want to thank Jeremy Fulton and all those guys over at Topps for making those other cards and then printing them and sending them to
me.
And
Jimmy Topps, man.
Jimmy Topps. You know Jimmy? You know, and that's the stuff I was telling you about when I was promoting the your own trading cards. You get them just like the pros. You just have to go to Topps.com. You upload your picture. And then the cards will be delivered to your doorstep in 3 to 5 business days.
Exactly what Ryan did to get his. You know what I mean?
You can pick the, you know,
exactly what Sickle did, baby.
A 79 border, an 82 border. Mine's a brand new 2018 washed. It's not even used yet. I got the first wash. That little wash had a home run shot. You're all going to be seeing a bunch of that this Saturday. Better be this motherfucking Saturday. So for any and all Crab Feast related information, go to thecrabfeast.com. You know what you can get there.
You can get your Master Charge shirt.
Guys, the Master Charge shirts are up. You can actually put one on your Master Charge.
Link is at the website, and we've both put it out on social. So go over there and pick up your Master Charge.
It's on my Twitter. It's on the Crab Feast Twitter. It's on my Facebook fan page, my personal Facebook page. It's on the Crab Feast Facebook page. It is on the website, correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... it's everywhere you need it to be, just like Master Charge. So get yours today. Some of you already, actually quite a few of you have already bought some. So snatch them up because they're only available for, what, two more weeks. And as always, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Laughable, or you can play directly from our site. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Crab Feast on Facebook and Twitter.
Proud to have back as a sponsor this week, ZipRecruiter, okay? We know it's challenging hiring nowadays to find qualified candidates. It takes a long time. There's so many applicants, and ZipRecruiter makes it easy, okay? You go to ZipRecruiter.com/crab, but let's tell you a little more about it. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That is insane. That's a great return rate. I would take that any day of the week. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free with this exclusive web offer. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/crab. That's ZipRecruiter.com/crab, C-R-A-B, and take advantage today. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
How long do your clothes last? Birdwell Beach Britches has customers that have worn the same shorts for over 25 years, and they get better looking with every wear, like a great pair of jeans, and I know why. We've told you about Birdwell Beach Britches, also birdies, whatever you want to call them, time and time again, week after week, how great they are, how durable they are, how versatile they are, and I took my Birdwell Beach Britches and put them to the test on my vacation. I swam in chlorine/urine-filled pools.
Nice work, dude.
I swam in ponds. I was on boats. I was tubing, and I wore my birdies for every single thing, and they are awesome. Like they say, durable. I throw a t-shirt on and some flops, went out to Funland down in Delaware in them. I didn't take the damn things off. I love them. They're best pair of trunks I've ever had. They're one of California's original surf apparel shops. In 1961, SoCal mom Carrie Birdwell Mann built the first pair of birdies for her surfer sons and transformed her small Southern California home into a store, launching Birdwell and creating one of California's first surfer apparel shops. They're guaranteed for life by their Santa Ana factory. That's what's amazing. Each piece of makes sense, though. They're built so well, you probably will have them for life. Each piece of Birdwell Beach Britches is individually inspected to ensure the highest quality and is covered by a lifetime guarantee. If a seam, stitch, or grommet breaks, you send it back to the factory, and they will fix it.
Grommet was also my favorite Muppet in the Muppets.
It's great. Grommet. It's one of my favorite Muppets. In addition to building board shorts up to size 42 or 50 in a custom pair, Burwell crafts their purpose-built apparel for everybody, not just the chosen few, offering jackets and shirts to size triple XL. The fall line right there, guys. So to get 10% off your first Burwell Beach Britches purchase with a lifetime guarantee and free shipping over $99, go to burwell.com and use discount code CRAB at checkout. That's discount code CRAB, C-R-A-B at burwell.com. Pick up your first pair of birdies and see why they've been an American icon since 1961.
Man, that's saying something.
They're great.
This guy, this week's guest, is also an American icon. We're excited to have him on, and you'll find out why he's an American icon. Ladies and gentlemen, we're excited to have on for the first time.
First time.
Please welcome Mr. Earl Skakel.
Earl Skakel!
Welcome to the Crab Feast!
Welcome to the Crab Feast!
What's up?
Dude, first of all, thank you for being here.
Oh, I've always wanted to do this, but I just figured you guys come when you want.
I mean, you know, there's so many people, and this is, first of all, long overdue. I mean, we go way back.
Way back.
Both of
to
you.
Back when you had perm and hockey jerseys, bro. Way
Looked
back.
Like one of the...
Hanson Brothers.
Hanson Brothers, yeah.
Yeah, I look like their sister.
so stoked to have you on. And actually, sorry it took so long. This is long overdue. So thank you for being here. And before we get into, because you came well prepared, why don't you promote your social media, your podcast, your show, whatever you want, everything and anything.
Well, it's just at Earl Skakel on all relevant media. That's E-A-R-L-S-K-A-K-E-L. Just Twitter and Instagram, and Inappropriate Earl is on SoundCloud and iTunes. And
Your podcast.
That's the podcast, which I would love to have you guys on. You know,
love, yeah,
to
do love it. That.
And no, I did not hack into iTunes for my high ranking, you jealous baboons.
Are people giving you shit?
Oh, yeah. They're like, hey, man, what's your secret? You got some Indian guy cracking the code? And it's like, how about hard work?
Yeah.
Like, how about...
He's Asian.
Like, the names on your board. It's tough booking this and getting people to come here.
Just juggling three schedules is a hurdle.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a hurdle.
Like, you know, to get the singer from Rat on my podcast, the great...
You got Stephen Perry?
Stephen Piercy.
Piercy, I'm sorry. Perry's Aerosmith.
That's Joe Perry, yes.
Oh, I got them all.
It's all good, but it was like...
Piercy. I was a big Rat and Roll fan.
Well, I saw them Friday in Costa Mesa.
I saw your social media, yeah.
The best.
Was it still a good show?
His crowd work is spectacular. He's like, fuck yeah, people. That's all he says. Like, we're going back for more, right? Fuck yeah.
They had a song. I think it was called Body Talk, yeah. And it was in a Golden
Come
Child,
and get your
Eddie
body
Murphy.
Talk.
I feel like it was in the Eddie Murphy Golden Child in like a fight scene in the top.
With Tex Cobb.
They were big for a minute.
You know what? They had a choice between putting that song on Golden Child or Top Gun.
No.
And they just, you know, no
Rat
one knew.
Rat rolled the dice.
Yeah. Snake eyes.
Wrapped out on that.
But, you know, we've all passed on gigs.
Top guy ain't passed on a Top Gun, I can promise you that. I haven't even passed on a Golden Child.
Right. You know, but it's just that might have helped their career a little bit. They made a lot of bad decisions.
Might have. So I really want to get into this with you because, you know, you have a very interesting upbringing. First of all, you're also the first guest to ever do the podcast with a dog on his lap, and I love it.
The Amazing Lois.
Hi, Amazing Lois. She's sweet.
Rescued her from Michael Vick's kennel.
Is that real?
Yeah. She's
you did?
A bait dog. Is this true?
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whoa. Well, and, hello.
She was a bait dog?
Yeah. They had like, you know, to get the dogs, like, I don't know, lathered up to battle, they would have smaller dogs that they could just use as chew toys and get them going.
Wow.
And she was one of the...
How'd you even know about that?
I got Craigslist. There was this thing that said Michael Vick's, you know, rescue operation. I was like, I can't have a pit bull in my house. But then I saw that there was a lot of little dogs. And she's
and it's here in L.A.?
Well, I think they... Took them from Atlanta and then brought them to all points in the country to, you know.
Raise awareness and.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you. And good for you, Miss Lois. You are amazing.
That's why I had to protest when the Steelers signed him, because that's my favorite team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because my dad was friends with the owner.
Oh, really?
Art Rooney.
Yeah.
Like, Art Rooney.
Yeah.
Each year we would get that they would win the Super Bowl. I would get a game used Super Bowl ball.
Are you serious?
Autographed by the team. So that's 9 Hall of Famers out of 22 starters. Those balls today would probably be worth $100,000 each, if in good condition.
What were you doing with them?
I have two brothers. Them in
yeah, right. I know. That's awful.
Two brothers and two sisters, but we were raised like coyotes to like function separately. So I would. There was a brick wall in my backyard that I would throw these footballs against,
oh,
and it would bounce to me perfectly. So yeah. I would play catch with myself with, you know.
Terry Bradshaw's autograph wearing off every fucking hit.
Lynn Swann.
There goes Mean Joe Green.
Elsie Greenwood, Donnie Schell, Jack Lambert, and
Franco Harris.
Yeah, Rocky Blyer. Mm-hmm. And every year I would get a ball from Art Rooney. He would send it to me personally. So
you could have that's a retirement plan, those balls.
That's $400,000, and who knows? I mean, memorabilia is crazy.
Yeah, especially those guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
9 Hall of Famers on one ball. Yeah, you would get a lot. I don't know how much you'd get for that, but you'd get quite a bit.
Fastest show on turf, remember?
I mean,
I'm looking at you like, what the fuck?
That's could be $100,000 each ball if in prime pristine condition. So
where'd you grow up?
Bel Air.
Oh, you did?
But when I tell people that, they just assume my family was loaded.
Yeah.
I
thought Florida. Why did I think Florida?
My parents moved to Florida in 88.
Oh, okay.
But we grew up in Bel Air. My dad bought the home in the early 60s when Bel Air was no nicer than Culver City.
Yeah.
Just a hilly neighborhood with not a lot of homes in it. And then the Bel Air fire happened. Burned down every house but ours.
No way.
Yeah, so it was literally like getting in on a tech stock, you know, just you were there. Because my dad had literally a water hose, and he was on the roof. He was not letting this house burn. And then Kareem moved in. OJ moved in. James Caan. Wilt Chamberlain lived across the canyon. And
then, holy shit.
And then in the 80s.
You got the all-star team in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, in the 80s. And this was in Bel Air in the 70s when there weren't a lot of black people.
Yeah.
Like, literally, there was OJ and Kareem and Wilt. And the guy who would take me to school was like Dikembe Mutombo black, like
yeah.
Leroy. And he got pulled over more times in his green Dodge Charger with me in the back than I could count.
Why? Do you had a driver?
We had so many interesting people. Like we
I thought
like,
he was driving a Dodge Charger. Yeah,
green.
Green.
Military green, white walls.
Don't you drive a Dodge?
A Charger Hellcat.
Yeah.
Daddy don't fuck around.
Is it because of Leroy?
Probably.
I bet there is.
Because he was like the first guy that died in my life that meant something to me. Like, you know.
Yeah.
I can remember the phone call like it was 2 seconds ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, his brother called and said, Earl, it's Ernie. Leroy's gone. And I'm like such an idiot.
How old were you?
It's probably 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And I was literally like, oh, where'd he go? And he's like, he's gone. I'm like, I was young. So I was,
sure.
He's like, you better get your mom on the phone. And then then she told me. So
how long had so he was kind of like what? Like your caretaker in a way?
Friend of the family. What was he?
Both. Almost not a stepdad, but my dad was away on business a lot. So he would, we had two guys who would basically, they would cook our meals. They were security, Polish guy named Freddy.
Why did you need security?
It was Bel Air, you know, it's like, this was back, you know, when
Dude,
the home.
Listen, I don't know who these three black guys are. Just moved to the neighborhood. Yeah. We're going to have to get security.
Well, let's see, like Kareem jogging around our neighborhood. It's an image I'll never get out of my head was, you know, this 7'2" black dude in dolphin shorts and goggles.
Yeah.
He was like the predator. Like,
yeah.
I thought there was three dots on my chest every time he looked at me. It was just such a, and his home was, he had this phobia of corners. So his home looked like the forum. It was a circle. Like there was no corners in his house.
He had a phobia of corners?
Yes. Yeah, someone
never heard of that.
Wow.
I mean, maybe he was claustrophobic to some degree. Yeah. So his house was in the middle of Stone Canyon, which is a big street in Bel Air. He's not there anymore, so I could feel I could see where he lives. And it was like a baby miniature LA Forum.
Wow.
Wow.
So he was my neighbor.
That's crazy.
So why are you... You said when people hear Bel Air, it doesn't sound like you were loaded, but it kind of sounds like you have more money than I... And damn well, I did.
I mean, I would say my family at that time was upper middle class. But, you know, when you say Bel Air, you think to now... you know, the Kardashians buying a $12 million home, and it's not even that nice.
Yeah.
I mean, our house in Bel Air looked like the fucking Addams Family house. We had dogs, probably six dogs at all times, ducks.
See, ducks. I think it just goes to show, like, you can have money, but still just be down to earth and be a normal person. Doesn't mean, and you can have a guy who takes care of your kids and drives them to school. Doesn't mean he needs to drive a Rolls Royce. He can be driving a green Dodge Charger.
Well, yeah, I mean, my dad was like the Rodney Dangerfield character in Caddyshack. Yeah. Like,
where did he grow up?
He grew up in Chicago.
Where did he go to college?
That I don't know. You know, he's like a combination of MacGyver and Jacques Cousteau. Like, he was
that's a great combination.
When you said he was up on that roof with the hose, that's what, like, you know, like those guys that are like, you hear, like, remember in There Will Be Blood? That guy's just crazy enough to be like, your dad, this is my fucking house, and I'll use a hose to keep the damn fire out. That's craziness.
Yeah, I mean, there were no sprinklers or anything. He was literally, I mean, I wasn't even born yet, but he told me the story that he's like, that house was not going to go down. And like, even his golf swing, he was a scratch golfer, but he was self-taught.
Yeah.
So his swing was like this Happy Gilmore, like, looping, like, you know, in golf, do you guys play at all?
Yeah, Jada. Like, I love golf.
So, you know, it's a very technical, take the club back in this line. You know,
straight arm.
Right. Yeah. You know, left shoulder in, hip this way. My dad was like, he would take the club, like, he would swing like Kent Tekulve pitch.
Like, that's another great reference.
Bizarre, looping half swing, and he would just hit it like 300 yards.
Yeah. Were you members of Bel Air?
Yeah.
Dope.
And that was the first place I heard the N-word.
At Bel Air?
Yeah. Because there's one black member there. He was like a lawyer. So I mean, I can't say that word.
Yeah.
But can I use like a replacement word?
Like, yeah, sure.
Because it is.
Imagine he just says something even worse.
Right.
Armenians. I shot bogey golf one day at Bel Air Country Club, and that's one over.
Yeah.
From the men's tees. It's pretty good for like a 13-year-old.
You know, that's really good.
You know, who didn't really practice. I would just go out there and hack away, and I ran home and I told my uncle, and by my uncle, I mean my dad, you know. And I'm like, Dad, I was so excited. And my dad was a big dude.
Could you walk to the course?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was great. And I'm like, Dad, I shot bogey golf from the front nine of the men's tees at Bel Air. And he just looks at me and goes, son, that's Armenian golf.
Oh, my God.
Now, I didn't know what that word meant. Right. I'd never heard the N-word before. Yeah. So the next day, I was so excited, I ran down to the caddy yard.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
Of course, they're all black.
Oh, God.
It's literally Caddyshack. Like, they are all black. And I'm like, guys. My dad said I shot Armenian golf. And the biggest, blackest caddy, his name is Ray Hood.
He's not going to believe this right now.
Ray Hood!
Get out of here, Ray!
Give me a read on this putt over here, Ray.
Earl, look. He looked like, oh, you got me, kid.
I mean, he looked like Abdullah the Butcher for you Mid-South wrestling fans. And he just looks at me and goes, Earl, we love your dad, but don't ever say that word again. And I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
And they taught you what it was?
Yeah. But they weren't that. My dad was the best tipper there. Like, you know, a normal caddy fee for nine holes is like $20. My dad would give them 50, and they could ride in the cart with him and drink beer.
Yeah.
You know, so they were like, all right, well, it's all right.
We'll look past that.
We'll let it slide. But my dad was a slob at this place. Like, he was a diabetic. So he'd have candy bars in his locker that were completely melted in his golf bag. So he would literally take a candy bar from his golf bag that was, you know, 80% melted, jam it in his mouth, wipe his hands on his shirt.
Yeah.
So, you know, one day he's pulls up to the lot, gets out of his car, and James Garner,
mm-hmm.
Rockford Files, was supposed to play golf with my dad. So he looks at my dad and goes, "Hey, boy, go take my tees to the first hole, or go take my clubs to the first tee." And my dad was such a great guy in that regard. He's like, "Sure." And then he takes the bags to the first tee. James Garner walks down and goes, "You know, I'm supposed to play golf with Jim Skakel. Where is he?" He's like, "You're looking at him." So that, nice. That was my dad. Yeah. Like, he was, I don't know if I would say rich, but he had a couple bucks, but he was like,
he had nothing proved to anyone.
No, he wore like plaid pants with striped shirts. He just didn't care.
Yeah.
What was he? What did he do that he was so connected?
You know, my parents were incredibly strange. They slept in separate rooms.
Your whole life.
Which I thought was completely normal. The first time I spent the night at my friend's house, Marcello, who was the cop who busted George Michael in the bathroom.
Oh, at the park?
Yeah, because he was a very good-looking Argentinian, you know, 6'4". He was a good-looking dude. His parents, at the end of the night, went in the same room. I'm like, "What are your parents doing, dude?" He's like, "Well, they sleep in the same room." I'm like, "That's gross."
And wait, what kid are you in line of your brothers and sisters?
I'm the baby.
You're the baby. Oh, okay. So did they always sleep in separate rooms,
yeah,
like before you were born and all that?
Yeah. And it was so, my dad slept in the farthest point of the eastern wing of the house.
Yeah.
And my mom had made the den into like this, you know, Wednesday Addams type of dark room where she would sleep till 2 in the afternoon because she wouldn't go to sleep till 7 a.m.
Wow.
So, but they were just very grounded.
Like, I'll tell you this straight up. If I was loaded, I would 100% be like, "I want my own room. I want my own closet." You know what I mean? I want my own space. I would love to have my own space.
Well, my mom was...
I mean, I don't know if you sleep until 2 in the evening. I just built a back house for myself, a small one.
Oh, we had that,
kitchen,
too.
Kitchenette and everything.
How many acres was the property?
I mean, you know...
Your upper middle class, by the way, is way nicer than the upper middle class in my head.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean...
But it's a different time, you know? Like,
our neighbors, like, in the 80s, you know, were like Stallone. Like,
that's what I'm saying. My neighbors in the 80s, you know, watched Stallone movies.
Right.
Yeah. Quoted Stallone, you know what I'm saying?
If they can afford a VCR.
You know, so like rich to me is like Stallone. We aren't in that category.
I see what you're saying, sure.
It's, you know, Russell Peters is rich to me. Like, I can go to the market tonight and buy my energy drinks for tomorrow and not have to sweat the purchase.
Right.
You know, I can take a girl out to a relatively nice meal and not, oh my God. But I guess it's rich as whatever you grew up around.
Sure. Of course, relative.
Yeah. So like Howard Keck was our neighbor. That's Keck Oil. Like,
jeez.
He's beyond billionaire.
Like, right.
It's the Keck School of Medicine at USC. Like, they're not naming wings for James Skakel.
Hey, Jimmy Skakel.
So, but they were just very grounded. My mom basically instilled in me, "Hey, treat everyone the same. We all shit out of the same hole." And
I'm going to bed.
Huh?
Now I'm going to bed. That was her lesson for the
day. Yeah. She was a strange woman. Like, with women, she gave me one advice, always make them happy. And she was a bizarre lady.
I mean, as difficult as that is, it really, when you strip it all down, well, that's all that matters.
Well, let's just say I have a high return rate.
Yeah, there you go, bro. There you go, bro. We're gonna come back to that because I really want to talk to you about your connection, your presidential connection.
Right,
this blew me away when I heard it, and I was like, "Really?"
Yeah, I mean, it's not something. It would mean more to me if it was blood, but my dad's sister Ethel Skakel married Bobby Kennedy.
It blows me away. So when did that happen? And how did they meet?
Well, you know, the Skakels were a fairly influential family back east.
Politically?
They probably were. I mean, their company was pretty big.
If you had money, you were political.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the West Coast. No one had probably ever heard of the Skakels, but back east and
in Bel Air, they did.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the caddies at the country club. I mean, my dad's been dead for 20 years. They're still waiting for him to show up with the beer and the melted chocolate bars.
Yeah.
But so I'm not exactly sure how Ethel and Bobby met. I'm assuming it was like at a high society party, and. You know, and then when, you know, he was a second brother to get killed in 68, the year I was born.
Were they married at that time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ethel was right next to him. How she didn't get shot.
Holy shit. It was in the kitchen, right?
It was in the Ambassador Hotel. I think he died in the kitchen, but he got shot in the
ballroom.
Yeah.
So that's out here, right? Down by USC, isn't it?
I think it's a school now.
Yeah.
Great job having Rosie Greer be the main bodyguard. Fucking 500 pound slob.
You know?
Did you ever meet him? Did you meet him?
Rosie Greer?
No, Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, no. I think he was shot in November of 68. I might be off on that, but I was born in September. So,
oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, my mom was probably pregnant with me.
Wow.
So, but they, my dad and sister weren't exactly that close. Like, there was one time at the Bel Air Hotel, my dad went to three places.
Mm-hmm.
He went to church to do whatever he was dealing with. he went to Bel Air Country Club, where he was treated like a god. And then he went to the Bel Air Hotel to drink with Harry Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fifth Beatle.
Yeah.
And one day we're having the Bel Air Burger, which is the best. Oh, it tastes so good. And probably because I didn't have to pay for it. So.
Yeah, right.
Oh, nothing like a free burger, just fries. Oh. And the waiter comes over to my dad and's like, "Mr. Skakel, your sister's over there. She'd like to come over." And my dad just looks at the waiter and goes, "Nah." And
wow.
Just left. So, you know.
Holy shit.
And did he have more than, was that, they have more brothers and sisters?
Yeah. And like my one uncle, George, died in a plane crash.
Wow.
You know, I never met my parents or my grandparents because they died in a plane crash.
They did?
Yeah.
How? All the same crash?
No, and different, which is why I had such a fear of flying.
I would too.
What kind of planes? These like little private, like Cessna kind of deals?
I think with my uncle it was, but with my grandparents it was a private plane.
Yeah.
That's why I had such a fear of flying. Like,
man.
You know, when I was opening up for Rob Schneider, you know, obviously you're flying everywhere, but like, it was like, God, I don't know if I can do this. These gigs are killer. Like,
but literally, but it's like, what you don't want.
It's like, you know, I don't drink. I've never had a drug or drink in my life.
Yeah.
So I'd have to fly, like, completely sober, and, like, every fucking bump I felt. And, like, you know, it's like.
I heard that some people in the Kennedy family blame the Skakels for the death of John John. Because you guys had such a history of plane crashes, and then Ethel came along, and then fucking John John.
Well, I think it was really John John's lack of skill. I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick.
Well, I mean, it just sounds like there's some resentment.
It is kind of interesting, because didn't JFK Jr. go down on a plane?
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
John John.
Oh, I didn't know. But like, I didn't know they called him John John.
God, it's royalty in my house growing up.
Flying a plane is fairly complicated. And you have to be certified.
It's a lot of weird plane shit going on between the Skakels and the Kennedys, though.
Which is amazing to me that the singer from Iron Maiden, Bruce Dickinson, is a fully licensed 747 jumbo jet pilot.
Wow.
And he flies the plane.
No, he flies their tour plane?
Yeah.
Fuck that. I wouldn't. I don't know. I'd be like,
well, how's it going up there, Bruce?
Travolta flies his. He's got one of those jumbo ones, and he flies a family. And
yeah,
that shit.
He's
got his own landing.
Bruce
strip.
Dickinson flies the Iron Maiden tour plane.
If you watch the documentary,
that blows me away.
I'll plug someone else's documentary.
It just blows me away. I love hearing it. Though.
I think it's called Flight of 666.
Tattooed Millionaire.
Yeah, his cover of All the Young Dudes is a real jammer. That documentary is basically about how he flies them to Brazil. They do a, you know, 3-hour concert, and then he gets on, and like, I don't know when he sleeps.
Yeah. Right. There's no co-pilot to work with him there?
Well, there's probably a co-pilot, but like he's the guy. Like, it's not like he's just sitting there reading Hit Parade or, you know.
That's so awesome.
Well, so that's, you know, now I don't have a fear of flying because I watch that show Air Disasters. that really helped me get over the fear.
Oh, why? What is it?
Basically, it takes the transcripts from plane crashes and reenacts why the plane crashed. And so it just really made me realize that the odds of a plane crash are literally 0.0001%. So many things have to go wrong. It's like winning the lottery. It's that high of odds that a plane will crash. But, you know, I have such a macabre.
Is it really that low?
Yeah, I mean, it's
the turbulence just kills. I don't mind flying at all. Turbulence is just a different story.
Yeah, well,
but no plane has ever crashed because of turbulence.
That's what I've heard. Is that really true?
Yeah, believe me, I've researched.
What about the dropping and the this?
Well, that's not
shit.
Really turbulence.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little nerve wracking too. And when the wind starts pulling a 747, I'm like,
yeah. I mean, if you get caught in the plane in front of you,
Vegas. It happens going into Vegas over those mountain ranges. Denver's the one. That's the one that always scares the shit out of me, landing in Denver, because as soon as you get below those Rockies, man, that shit's nuts.
Or Calgary, because you fly
over the mountain range,
and it's because the air is so bitterly cold in Calgary.
It's thin, like thin air.
It's thin air. It's very, very cold, which I guess makes it more difficult. And literally, your plane in Calgary, you come in like a side angle, and then at the last second, they can straighten it out.
I feel like that's what happened in Denver. I feel like we came in like this, and then they brought it down like that.
So they just go off the transcripts of the black box, and they have actors reenact the scene, and they shoot it like a TV movie. But there was one crash where there's a PSA flight where it's very educational. Like, I had no idea once a plane hits 140 miles an hour, it has to take off no matter what's in front of it. It has to. There's not enough room to brake. So there's this one flight where, you know, the pilot calls out in 10 knot increments. All right, we're at 120. Get the flaps, 130, 140, rotate. And that's when as they hit 140, you hear one of the pilots go, "Oh, shit." And there was a dump truck at the end of the runway that they did not know about. And you hear the co-pilot say, "Fuck it." And so they take off. It clips the dump truck. Plane goes flying off into the side hangar. And
did it blow up and everything?
Yeah, blow up. Yeah, everyone dies.
Oh.
You hear the co-pilot say, "Steve, my skin is burning. I can't feel myself." And that's it. So I thought, I'm going to go on YouTube.
You hear the dude, that's his last words.
It's the actors. So, you know, and they go.
But that's from the black box transcript, though, right?
So no matter what is said.
Jesus.
So I thought. Well,
I love that this got you over flying.
Right? This is scaring the shit out of me.
So I go on YouTube.
I can't feel myself.
You know, on YouTube, you can get the actual fucking recording.
Oh, it is there?
So I find that flight. It's PSA something or other. And that whole scenario breaks down, and the first comment on YouTube was some guy who says, "Pussies."
Of course.
And then the second one was some guy calling the first guy a faggot.
Right. Yeah, of course. The
third guy. That was me, actually, the second guy.
Holy shit.
But it did help me get over my fear of flying, because it was like you just start to realize that it's such an unlikely. It's more likely I'll get in an accident going to the Comedy Store after this.
Right, right. Well, you came with a shitload of stories,
This might be a two-parter. I gotta be honest.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I'm already trying to get rebooked.
Yeah, I know.
Why don't we talk about
it's a tough business?
Well, you said the one story could be a 40-minute story.
Well, the gangbang. I could streamline the gangbang story.
Well, you got to get to the Comedy Store.
What time is it right now?
I don't have
I'll tell you.
10:14.
Oh, we're good. I got at least another hour.
Great. Oh, at least. You can no.
I mean, this
from
is
here,
your guys.
35 minutes tops. You need to get there.
35 from here.
Yeah,
I think the gang.
Tops.
I think
you,
the gang.
You start great. Let's start with the gang bang.
So, a lot of people ask me what got me into comedy. Like, you know, we all have our different path, and my path was I used to run with this group of 10 dudes. Who were all agents and managers, you know, ICM, William Morris.
Did you guys all grow up together, or how did you?
The school system, Beverly Hills. And so they're like, "Earl, get into comedy. You're the funniest guy we know." we'll help you. Just get into it initially on your own and just get your feet wet at open mics. Of course, they all left the business as soon as I started this fucking
all of them, huh?
All but one, who's still a huge manager today. I won't say his name, but because especially after this gangbang story, I'm sure he's not going to be. He's going to listen to this. Jesus Christ. But these guys worked 100-hour weeks.
Yeah.
And then on weekends, they had 100-hour weekends. I mean, they were animals. Thank God the Me Too movement wasn't back then. I mean.
Yeah.
We all had girlfriends at that time. So we had a system in place if a scene was going to break out, where you would call everyone's answering machine and go alert, alert, alert 3 times. One alert meant something could be going down. So, you know, it was like the DEFCON 5 in War Games. Right. It was like 2 alerts was like, get your clothes ready. So they call me at 3 or 4 in the morning. I'll change the guy's name. Hot Tub Johnny. He's like, Skakel, get over to Jimmy's house on Doheny. There's a, you know, alert, alert, alert. And, so I'm like, all right, I'll be right there. And I hang up the phone. My girlfriend's like, where are you going? I'm like, oh, Bill needs a ride to the airport. No, I don't know a lot of flights that are leaving at 4 in the morning on a Wednesday. But, you know.
Pretty sure this one won't crash. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in my pants, no shirt. I got my car parked in the middle of Doheny, right below Beverly, just to give you guys a local reference. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find parking because it's all permit parking. So I was so horny and jacked up because I knew if they were calling me, it was like a good time. And so I left my car running in the middle of Doheny, keys in the ignition, doors unlocked. I go up to the guy's
running.
House. Yeah. I was so like, you know, I was fucking testosterone through the roof back then. And I go in there and the door's already cracked. And I'll never forget the visual of when I opened the door. It was like that opening shot in Saving Private Ryan with just fucking bodies everywhere. You know, it seemed like hundreds of rubber boxes, just condom wrappers everywhere. And the girl looks up at me. She was like blowing some dude. And she looked like Alice Cooper after about 85 encores. I mean, she looked, as they say, a little green around the gills.
Oh, my God.
She looks up at me and goes, who are you? I'm like, Earl. And some guy in the back's like, oh, he's in Guns N' Roses, toots. He's got he's got more money than all of us. And she's like, come over here. And I'm like, no offense, but I need a condom. And the guy whose house it was like, dude, look in the kitchen. I think we're all out. I'm like, oh, all right. So I go in the kitchen, and I see a Pringles can, which probably would have worked at this point. Because there was at least 9 to 10 guys that had been.
One girl.
Yeah, that had been. But they were into like these weird group sex scenarios where there weren't that many girls.
Yeah.
Like, no, none of them were gay. They just liked.
Sounds like.
No, but they really weren't. They were just into having sex with their buddies.
Yeah.
So out of the corner of my eye, I see an unopened bag of Ritz crackers. Now, I got a pretty big hammer. Uh-huh. So,
by the way, he really fucking does. He sent a picture. I showed Jay the picture. I've heard you were blessed. You're blessed.
That was at like 60%.
That's what we wanted to know, where you were.
How long
is it? I know you've measured it.
I haven't.
Come on. Wouldn't you if you had that kind of hammer?
You know.
10?
Oh, I have no idea. 11 in the right mouth.
Good. Hello.
Let's just say it'll leave a smile on your face.
I mean, it might tear your mouth. It might leave a bigger smile.
I mean, it makes girls, after a couple minutes with me down there, look like that thing Boba Fett fell into. So I see the Ritz cracker bag. I'm like, you know, that could work. So I very, with surgeon-like precision, you know, open up the top of the cracker bag. I poured all the crackers out.
I'd be like the crumbs be getting all like scratching my dick up on the inside, you know, what's left in there.
Well, that was the funny thing is when I pulled out after I finished, my dick looked like those ice cream cones with the nuts at the end.
Uh-huh. Nutty Buddy.
Yeah. Oh
my God.
I had a 10-inch Nutty Buddy.
Now he's giving himself the 10, by the way.
So I take the girl.
Unofficial 10-inch.
I take the girl into my buddy's office, and there's all these scripts. It's a table kind of like this, and all these scripts for Under Siege 2, the Seagal.
Seagal, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's why when that movie's on cable, I can't watch it. So I'm doing my thing, and her vagina at this point.
With a Ritz cracker wrapper on.
Well, this girl. I
so wait, what's her deal, like, role in this?
Well, I'll tell you, after, I didn't know at that time. I was like, oh, this is just some girl they met at the Four Seasons, which is exactly where they met her. The Four Seasons back in the 90s was like, it was like a place to meet rich women, prostitutes at the bar. It was just like, and there weren't that many dudes there for whatever reason. So it was a good place if you were a single dude. Or I guess you didn't have to be to, you know, get action. It was, you know, the halcyon days. Oh, I miss those days so much. Now I have the Comedy Store. Hello. So, you know, I do my thing, but her vagina just, I'll never forget that right before I put it in the first time, I looked down and I shouldn't have. And it just, it looked like the number 4 at Arby's blew up.
Good Lord.
In like a fisherman's net, just
blew up
in a fisherman's net.
Just it looked like that thing. Remember I think it was The Empire Strikes Back when they're trying to hide from the Star Destroyer and they go into that like cave.
And, oh, and then it chases it out.
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Oh my God.
To come. I pull out. I just shoot a massive load all over these Under Siege 2 scripts. Just.
You nutted on them.
No wonder that movie was a fucking disaster. And
I can't read the first 5 pages, man. It's all stuck together.
I don't recall this Eric Bogosian page. What the hell?
Oh, my God.
Just blew a geyser like that episode of The Three Stooges when Curly found the oil geyser.
Oh, my God.
So I finish, I put my clothes on, and my buddies were kind of scummy back then. I knew they wanted this girl out because I was the last guy. And you know, I'm like, come on, honey, I'll give you a ride home or wherever you need to go. And at this point, she just looked awful. Like, she looked like Michael Spinks walking to the ring when he was about to get blasted.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. She just looked like...
all just shook.
Just like... just rough. I mean, I wanted to call an 800 number and donate. You know, it's just... So she grabs her panties, which at this point look like diapers, just because everything was just stretched out beyond belief. And we go... She puts a jacket on. I wasn't really paying attention to the jacket. And she gets in my car, and I look over at her and say, hey, you all right? You want to go to Hughes, the market, and get a bottle of water or something? And I see on the left side of her jacket says Shelby Motors. Now, I'm a car guy, you know, so I'm like, oh, my God, you know Carol Shelby? And she looks at me in a delivery drier than me, goes, no, that's my husband.
And I'm like, oh, my God.
Holy shit. So I take her.
This is the Carol Shelby of Shelby Cobra fame.
The guy.
She's his ex-wife or his wife?
She said his wife at the time, and she was kind of, I guess she was in her mid-30s, and he was probably in his 70s, but he had some heart problems, so I'm sure they weren't fucking.
And she was just into gangbangs?
Well,
or like she was just into like...
She was just horny.
Yeah.
Because when I dropped her off at the Sterling Plaza, of course, Donald Sterling's hotel on Beverly Glen and Wilshire, for those of you who want to do a tour of this gangbang.
you could do the stops.
Take the TMZ bus and just ask him to go to Beverly Glen and look to the left.
How much for the Carol Shelby's wife's gangbang? We could do that for $6.
So she looks at me as I'm in the driveway. She's like, hey, do you want to come up? Like, that's, she was still horny.
Oh, my God.
So I went, this is the last job I ever had. I went to the Sports Connection on 31st and Ocean Park. which was the gym they used in the John Travolta movie, Perfect, if you've ever seen that.
Okay.
And I told my two buddies about my evening, Steroid Rob and, say, I don't know, Black Albert. And the Steroid Rob is a real horny bastard. Like, he would have fit in with this group. He's like, dude, can you introduce me and Black Albert to her? I'll say I play on the Raiders, and he can say he just produced Prince's last album. And I'm like, you don't have to do that. Really don't. She's at the Sterling Plaza, it's room 602. Just knock on the door and tell her you're friends with Earl. So they go over there that day.
Fuck, they really do.
Oh, they were so horny. It's just a wild time in my life with my friends. And 3 days later, they call me. And I'm like, hey, how was it, man? She's wild, right? And they're like, we're still here.
Come
oh
on.
Oh, my God.
They moved them with her.
Yeah. So then word started spreading around my gym friends about this situation. And my buddy, let's change his name to Travis Dane. That was Seagal's name in Under Siege 2. he's like, dude, I got to meet this girl. I'll take her to pool. Take her to play pool and dinner. I'm like, you don't have to. So he goes over there. She calls me the next day. And I'm like, hey, how was Travis? Big dick, right? Loves to eat pussy. She's like, I didn't touch him. I'm like, you didn't touch one guy? She's like, Earl, I'm not fucking any guy that can't beat me in pool.
Shut up.
And I can swear on my parents' graves.
Oh, my God.
None of that story was embellished.
I can't. I mean, man,
amazing.
I just—that's the last girl I want to go have sex with.
Kind of the girl you want to bring home to your mom.
I like to beat her in pool, though.
Yeah, pocket pool.
That is hilarious.
All right, we're gonna pause for the cause here, guys. If you're looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds, I'm talking about bedroom performance here. I'm talking to you guys. Get the BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance to another level. Check this out. They've got the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so they work. Since they're chewable, they'll work faster than a pill. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And this stuff is cheaper than those other two, so this is a no-brainer. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time awkwardly waiting in the pharmacy line because Blue Chew ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code CRABFEAST. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's Blue, B-L-U-E, Chew.com, promo code CRABFEAST.
So, but this was what my friends were into, just like scenes. And then I had my gym friends who were just as crazy.
Like, what do you mean? You said you see a lot of it at the gym.
Well, I used to work out at 24-Hour Fitness in West Hollywood. So one day I'm in the jacuzzi because I play hockey, and hockey's a brutal sport, even at recreationally. And someone cross-checked me in the back. And
did you play in high school?
No. I picked it up after I got out of college. And so I go in the jacuzzi just to, have the jets blow on my back, and this guy comes in, and he starts playing footsies with me. And I'm like, hey, dude, I'm straight. He's like, well, you shouldn't come in here if you don't want your dick sucked. And he's like, I give the best blowjob here. And that's a bold statement.
That is a bold statement.
And you know what? He did. And so then I'm like, all right, dude, I got to go. I'm going to go in the steam room. Because I used to have bad skin. So, I mean, I'm not talking like Robert Davi style, but like, I'm still probably insecure about it. So I go in the steam room. I'm in there. And, you've been in steam rooms, right? Mm-hmm. To get it steam going, you maybe a Dixie cup, thimble thing of water, put on the conductor. Well, this gay dude comes in with a 74-ounce big gulp cup. I mean, water spilling out of the edge. And he pours the whole thing on the conductor. Holy so right then I knew something was going down.
Yeah, right.
He says...
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So I ball up my fist just in case, I'm all about, listen, when in Rome, and at this 24-Hour Fitness, you are in Rome. 3 or 4 minutes, nothing. Dead silent.
And is it like so thick you can barely fucking see a thing in there?
Yeah. Oh my God! It's like the
like you don't see him.
No, right. I mean I knew he was there, but right. you saw nothing. You right. could not see your hand in front of your face.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
And then about 3 or 4 minutes after nothing, a guy comes in just a towel and the biggest fucking boner I've ever seen in my life. Like
that just cut the cloud right now. Oh,
dude, it looked like a midget trying to get out of a tube top. I mean, and he looks over at me. And clearly, I'm not his type. Looks over at the guy next to me. Clearly, he was his type. Turns around. So his ass is like in front of our faces. Drops the towel and grabs his ankles. And for the next 5 minutes, I heard,
"Come on."
Good.
And whenever I tell this story,
he's like, "Well, I got to get my steam."
Like we weren't getting the point of it.
But whenever I tell this story, I'm sure you guys have the same question. Do you guys have a question for me right now?
Did they know each other?
That I don't know. But usually, most people's question is, "Why'd you stay?"
Oh, you stayed the whole time?
Oh, fuck yeah. And I stayed because I was there first. Fuck those guys.
What if he would have dropped it in front of you? What if you were his type?
I mean, I probably wouldn't have acted.
Yeah, I believe you.
So, I mean.
That's at the gym.
That's, but it's so, and I've seen it at, I'll say the name, fuck it, Equinox. I go to Equinox now. You'd think that you wouldn't see anything there. My first day as a member there, you know, I walk in, and Equinox is like, you know, Fabio's there, you know, some big name comics work out there, you know, guys like Jack Black and all that.
Where is that?
Sunset Plaza.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So my first day there, I'm not even an Equinox member for, I don't know, 26 minutes. And I open up the steam room door, thinking, oh, this is going to be great. No sex, nothing, just get good steam. Open up the door. I see two guys blowing each other in the corner.
He walked
just deep throating their hogs. Third guy just loitering, just a voyeur.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks up at me and goes,
"He's you in the other situation."
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's probably getting off. I think
yeah,
he was
I'm sure
getting.
He was.
He looks up at me and goes, "Bro, you got to get out of here." And I'm like, "What am I doing wrong? I like I don't even have 2 feet in the." The steam. I've literally my left foot, and I was like stopped, and I'm like, well, "What did I do wrong?" He's like, "Oh, you're wearing sneakers. You're tracking in dirt." Like I'm like, "Are you crazy? There's gonna be semen
all of
on your foot in about 2 seconds, and you're worried about a pebble from my fucking ponies because there's a Buster Douglas guy, so I bought the ponies he wore. So I go downstairs to management to complain. I'm like, literally, I've been a member here for less than a half hour. I just saw what made me leave 24-Hour Fitness. I think I'll go to LA Fitness or something. And the manager's like, "Mr. Skakel, we don't want to lose your business first day. I'm really sorry. That rarely happens here." Okay. We're going to upgrade you to the executive locker room. They have their own steam room. It's bigger, private showers.
They're actually fucking there.
Yeah. Because you have a KISS t-shirt on, yeah. We're going to put your locker next to Gene Simmons. Maybe you'll meet him. And I'm like, okay.
Is that real? Is that what they
yeah,
said?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. None of these stories are fictional. I'm not that good of a creative mind. So a second day at Equinox, first day of the executive steam room. I'm in there, and it's great. I mean, the steam room there is about the size of this room. It's marble. It's clean. They have 3 Mexican dudes in the executive room at all times cleaning. That's their whole job is to follow you so there's no water footprints. I mean, it's worth the money if you're into cleanliness. So I'm in there. You can tell a good-looking gay dude comes in there, sits right next to me. Like, there's the stadium seating in this
stadium. Yeah, stadium seating.
You know, some hot dogs in there.
Right. Yeah. I
mean, go for it!
By the way, I think a gay dude would kill it in the hot dog eating contest. Just
they might be. You know, who knows?
4 in your mouth, 4 in your ass. You could double your production. So same deal. This guy doesn't say a word to me for a few minutes, and then he just looks at me and goes, "You have a great body." Now, I'm insecure. Who doesn't like to hear that? So I'm like, "Oh, thanks, man. I work out a lot for the girlfriend I don't have." And he's like, can I ask you a question?
Oh, man.
I'm like, yeah, I guess our fourth wall's been broken.
Yeah.
He's like, does she give good head? And I'm like, it's unbelievable, bro. Could suck the paint off of 12 homes on a cul-de-sac. Like, and then I thought, what would gross a gay guy out? A real hairy pussy. Just like, looks like a chia pet plucked a pastrami sandwich. Like, big tits, like big bologna pancake nips with the Jimmy Dean sausage getting hard. And this guy's getting closer to me. If anything, I'm turning him on. And he gets nose to nose to me, as close as my mouth is to this mic, and goes, I bet I give better.
I can't. They love you, huh?
Well, men
love you.
I think it's because I throw off such a straight vibe that
it's like you're like a bucket list attorney.
Yeah, like we got to have what we can't have. So, you know, and I guess I'm the same way. If a girl blows me off, I want her even more. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, I do well with women, but this one didn't go out with me. Like, why? I want her more now. So,
and you know, dudes are dudes.
Yeah.
And when dudes know that dudes are down, you know what I mean? They just know that, like, gay dudes, you know what other dudes are into. You know what I mean? Like, if you're gay and you're gay, you're like, oh, fuck. I can just say to a gay dude, if I'm gay, a gay dude, hey, you want to fuck around? They're like, fuck yeah, dude.
That's the thing about that. That's why I asked if they knew him, because you don't even need to say that. You can walk into a thing, bend over, and put your ass in somebody's face.
Well, they're just
and they're
so...
just going to go out. They're men.
Well, gay men are just... I don't know what it is. But
no, it's just men.
It's
men. If that was a woman, if like it was a straight woman men, coming into a straight man, and women were as up front of just dropping me and like, boom.
Bend over. There's a guy that's going to eat her ass. There's definitely a dude that's going to eat that ass.
Well, that's the funny thing is I used to go to the 24-hour fitness that's 24/7 on Sepulveda and Ventura, and their steam room is co-ed. So
oh, really?
Night, yeah. So one night I'm in there, and this is after all this had taken place. Sometimes I have I can't sleep, so I'll go there.
You and your mom, huh?
Well, I wish. and this beautiful girl in a bikini goes in there with me, and she starts like vibing with me, and I was so uncomfortable I had to leave, but I could stay in there while two guys are eating ass.
Right. For, like, totally. Why were you uncomfortable? You were afraid that, like,
I was just like, you know, I guess I'm so desensitized by gay dudes' aggression when they want it that, you know, women, I don't run across too many women who are like, yeah, fuck me in the steam room, or you know, let me, you know, blow you or whatever, you know, eat my ham hog down there. You know, so, you know, I was like, wow, I got to get out of here. See ya.
I'm out.
I hear it.
How old were you when you lost your virginity?
21. I was a late bloomer. But, you know.
It sounds for, like, someone who grew up in Bel Air and, like, your, you know, your parents, like, get, like, sheltered you and kept you, like, and, like, you know what I mean?
I was incredibly sheltered.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I went to a very advanced high school in terms of, like, sex and stuff, Notre Dame High.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in Sherman Oaks?
Yeah.
I used to live near there. I would go, you say advanced because I went over to the homecoming game one time when I lived there. You know, now I've said this before, like our homecoming games were people driving around the track for the parade with like Chrysler LeBarons, you know, convertible mm-hmm. LeBarons.
They used to have one.
Shit like that. And what was another one? A town car. I think it was a Chrysler town car. These people, I mean, it was all fucking dripping money.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I was a class clown in high school. So I wasn't really, I'm not going to say I wasn't into women, but like I just, you know, I really found my game later on in life.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Where'd you go to college?
SMC and uh-huh. then messed around at USC for, I flamed out.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think college is for me. I didn't want to be like a cubicle guy.
Yeah.
And so I became a certified fitness trainer.
Yeah.
Like, I used to be a lot bigger, so I made a lot of money. And then, I don't know, my buddies talked me into stand-up, and then they all left, and I had to struggle for a long time.
Did you start doing stand-up before you lost your virginity?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, at 21, that was, like, probably 10 years before I started. I mean, I started late at stand-up. I started at 30, so, which, you know, I kind of regret, but, you know, it's,
you
know.
You can't change it. That's what it is.
So, but the girl, the first time I had sex was, you know, I was sleeping. She came over. She got on top of me.
What do you mean you were sleeping and she came over?
Well, she had the key to my place. You know, I was 21.
Oh, you're 21.
I lived on my own.
Right.
Because my parents moved to Florida, and so they, you know, helped me out with an apartment. And so she gets over there. I'd never had sex before.
Did she was, know that?
No. But I knew I would be good at it because my mom just, she said one thing, make him happy first. So I said, don't come early. Whatever you do, don't come early. Think about hockey. Think about rat.
Hockey and
think
rat.
About, just, you know, just your. So she gets on top of me.
Wait, now how long had you been seeing each other?
Probably about a couple months. I met her at the gym I worked at.
And you just weren't going to admit that you were a virgin?
No.
Were you embarrassed or were you scared it would chase her away?
Probably both, to be honest with you. You know, my parents didn't really tell me much about interacting with women. So any interactions I did have were based on my humor, like making them laugh. Mm-hmm. But this girl had slept with a few people. You know, she knew
I mean,
she
nothing
was
like
doing.
Carol Shelby's wife.
But she was
one of the few people that night.
But I still, I mean, no one's a Carol Shelby.
And then
wife.
A few more people.
I mean, she's the real deal. I mean, like, I mean, I can imagine how blown out it is in 2018. I mean, so nasty. Dude. I mean, God damn. I mean, better call Seagal and get Under Siege 3 on the fucking books. Because her pussy's under siege now. I mean, you could probably literally film Under Siege 3 in her pussy.
That's ridiculous.
With the full cast. Full cast. Even Bogosian and that Jufro. Just, so she gets on top of me and, I went inside of her, like no rubber or whatever. And she's like, hold on. Wait.
No Ritz wrapper either?
Nothing.
No, man.
Saltine, man.
I mean, going all for it.
She's like, wait. So she goes, now, to tell a dude who never had sex, wait. It was like putting a bowl of Alpo in front of an abused pit bull and saying, don't eat it. So she starts rifling through her purse. I'm like, oh, fuck, she's going to pull out a condom. And I'm like, I'm not going to need it by the time she puts it on. And she pulled out a CD. She wanted us to have sex to music.
Like her mixtape?
Like her had personal one. No, like her singing.
Oh, so
her demo.
Her demo.
Well, nowadays, who doesn't have a podcast? Right.
You know what I mean?
Put this on, motherfucker.
So she pulls out a Guns N' Roses CD.
You're in the band. I mean, what a fucking coincidence.
Mm-hmm. So I got publishing on this. So I'm like, wow, I don't really want to have sex for the first time to Welcome
is
to
it,
the Jungle.
Okay, it is Appetite for
No, sure. It was the EP, Lies.
Oh, okay.
And she was a romantic at heart, so she put on song number 2, Patience, which is a great song.
Great song.
And it really,
it was the message you were trying to send yourself.
Well, you think, what?
Be patient, don't blow it.
For both of you. You know, you take care of me, I take care of you, but let's both be patient. And it was so good, I lasted until the whistling part.
That's not bad for your first time, buddy.
Now, for those of you not familiar with the song, you hit play and Axel starts to whistle.
We used to play that song at World Cafe all the time, like on Friday, Saturday nights around like 11:45, like, and the whole fucking bar would get into that song.
It's such a good song.
I've been walking the streets
tonight. Yeah, just trying to get it right. The streets don't call me, but, you know, I'm just like, you know, such a video.
Yeah,
too.
I need you.
That was before Adler got kicked out of the band. He got kicked out of that band for drugs. That's like crazy.
Isn't that insane?
Is that real?
Yeah, and Slash had to tell him. Do you know how bad your drugs?
Why? Because no one else was doing drugs. Well,
they weren't doing it to that level.
Yeah. Slash was his best friend, so they're like, you got to deal with this guy. And I ended up living in a building with the drummer, Century Park East and Olympic. I don't know why I'm giving you all these exact intersections.
I know that one, though.
Could be the
right by Avenue of the Stars.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's two 21-story buildings.
I know.
And I lived on the 19th floor.
You did?
Yeah.
You were looking over the Fox lot.
Yeah. So Nakatomi Plaza, I could
see.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
And the girl who lived next to me was the original girl from King Kong, Fay Wray.
Oh, come wow. on.
So when the earthquake happened in 94, you know, that building was on rollers. So the whole building shook side to side like this for hours.
Oh,
really?
But when the initial earthquake hit, I mean, I thought the building was going to fall over. So I had to go and knock on her door just to make sure she was all right, because she was older.
Yeah, how? Yeah.
70 or 80. And I'm like, hey, I think your guy's coming
back. The gorilla's
back for
not coming.
Yeah.
And now he said he is.
I think he's coming back for you. She didn't really get, I was bombing. She didn't get the joke, but it was a wild building. Like, Get Smart lived in the building, you know, for you older fans, you know. Yeah. And I asked him for a shoe phone once in the elevator. He told me to fuck off.
Did he really?
Yeah.
He said fuck off?
Yeah. Well, he didn't want to be, like,
right,
recognized, but then his license plate on his car was Smart 86. It's like, well, don't be such a dick.
Yeah.
He's dead now, but so is the guy that Me Too'd me, but that's all right.
Yeah, you were texting me about you got Me Too'd. You comfortable talking about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want to say the guy's name. He's dead. So, but, you know, he can't defend himself, but, like, this guy was a huge guy. I mean, big in the 90s. I don't want to say what shows he casted, but, you know, the word X may be in them. Look it up in your files. So he had seen me do stand up, and I was pretty bad when I started. I just didn't know what I was doing. And he told me.
Always interesting, though.
Well, I'm talking even before you saw me.
Okay. Even before hockey jerseys?
Oh, dude, I was like, I mean, I think the first joke I told was, and it was probably stolen, and I didn't know it was, I was writing a book about Liberace called Tulips on My Organ. Just horrible. Yeah. I mean, awful. And, you know, he's writing a book in astrology called How to Find Uranus. It's just like the worst joke. So the fact that this guy said I was funny should have been a red flag that I wasn't. And somehow we got started talking about Brittany Murphy. And he's like, well, do you want to meet her? She's doing the table read of King of the Hill tomorrow. And, of course, this is giving away what studio it was at.
You know, but how did you meet him?
I think
he just saw you do a show? He just happened to see it?
There was a bar in Beverly Hills called Indochine, and they had a comedy night.
I remember Indochine, yeah.
They had a comedy night, and he saw me there. And, you know, looking back now, yeah, I could tell this guy's funny. I'll get him in my office. He'll be impressed, and I'll get him to meet Brittany Murphy. So
so he comes up to you after the show and gives you his info?
What's your deal? Are you an actor? And I'm like, so green. I mean, now I look back and go, what an idiot. I'm like, oh, yeah, man. Oh, I'm funny. Thanks, man. We should hang out or whatever I said. And he's like, well, you did a joke about Clueless. Well, just so you know, Brittany Murphy's doing the table read tomorrow for King of the Hill. And I didn't know what a table read was. Mm-hmm. I literally thought I had this image of Brittany Murphy sitting on a table reading a book. Like, I really had no clue. She's like, why don't you meet me in my office? I'll put your name on the list, and then we'll talk about your career, and then we'll meet Brittany after. So I go on the lot, and you know, my name's on the list. I go into this guy's office, and his office was unbelievable, like a shower in it. I mean, it was probably double the size of this room if you knocked out this wall. So he's standing on the couch, small talk, you're funny once again. And then he starts unzipping his pants.
What?
Yeah. And he's,
middle of the day.
Yeah. And he's stretching. And I thought, oh, I guess I'll, and I'm not doing a bit to you. This really happened. I'm like, oh, I guess I should get up and stretch. So I'm so clueless. I'm like, so we're doing
this. This is what high power people do. They stretch. Man.
Weird calisthenics in this guy's office. I'm excited about meeting Brittany Murphy. And then he starts to take his underwear off. I'm like,
wait, hold on. He went from he unzipped, but he took his pants down.
Yeah.
And then his underwear.
Well, he starts to take his underwear off.
Is he wearing boxers or briefs?
Boxers. Tight boxers.
Boxer briefs.
Yeah. And I'm like, what are you doing, bro? You know, it started to kick in. Houston, we have a problem here.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, Earl, I ran a marathon, and he's still stretching. Like, that's supposed to be the ultimate distraction. And my testicles are bruised, and I wanted you to take a look at them. And I'm like, Where's Brittany Murphy?
Crazy.
Where's Brittany Murphy? He's demanding.
So he puts his pants on when he figured it wasn't going to happen, and then he takes me into the table read for King of the Hill.
He went from that, you walked right into the table read.
And I'll never forget, you know, it's a huge table with there's Mike Judge, there's Brittany Murphy, and everyone else, writers, producers, and he just puts his feet up in the corner, and I'm sitting there with him, and they probably thought I was his boyfriend or something. So I meet Brittany Murphy after. And
wait, hold on a second. I got to ask. What was he thinking he could do? Did he ever promise you anything?
No.
Did he ever, like...
Well, I'm sure he thought, this guy will suck it or whatever. I'll suck him.
But what's the payoff for you? Never said, I'll give you a
VO. He didn't need to. I don't think he needed to. I think, like, he probably, just like a lot of the people in this business for so many years, this was probably like a routine he did.
For a lot of people, they would give a role or offer something.
I think
it
was just like, hey, look what I can do.
Look who I am.
Start right here, and then we'll
see
what
where
happens.
It goes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
How was Balls really bruised?
Lightly.
So let's say you did want to partake. He's going to do whatever and then roll into that table read late?
Yeah. Oh, he just busted in the middle of it. So they all looked up at us, and I knew who Mike Judge was because mm-hmm. I'm like Beavis and Butthead. It's like, I love that. So we, you know, watched it, and then I got to meet Brittany Murphy after, and she was cool. Like, small talk for 3 or 4 minutes. And this shows you how naive I was back then. I'm like, all right, I'm going to give this guy one more shot. I said, hey, man, I got to go because I was a little freaked out. But do you want to do lunch, you know, tomorrow? Just, you know. He's like, yeah, why don't you come over to my house?
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, it's got to be in the daytime, bro.
Just like today. Right. Just like today when you tried to fuck me.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, I'm like, what? Like the hour of the day is going to make it any worse or better. So I go over to his house. He lived behind the Beverly Hills Hotel. You know, once again, small talk. And out of the corner of my eye, I see this really nice movie trailer. Like a, what do they call them?
Star Wagon.
Star Wagon. But this was like, you could tell just the outside of it was, this is a little nicer than others.
Where was it? Like his backyard or something?
Yeah, his driveway.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow, man, that's really cool. What's that? It's like, oh, David Duchovny gave it to me for a certain show. And I'm like, oh, can I go check it out? It's like, oh, yeah, man. I'm like, but you got to stay here, bro. Like, I'm just going to go check it out. Right. I'll be right back. So I go in, and I've been in some nice, you know, Star Wagons. This was like a house. I mean, like a double wide
trailer,
refrigerator, like a master bed. So I'm looking at the bed. I'm looking like all in the corners, marble shower, and then all of a sudden I hear the door open.
Oh no!
And I turn around, and he's like in his shorts, rubbing his dick. And like, bro, it ain't happening. And I don't care if Brittany Murphy's in here either.
Where the fuck David Duchovny?
And then I never.
Did he say? How did he react? Was he mad or he just let you go?
He just let me go. But it's like at the time, it didn't really bother me until all this Me Too stuff started happening. You know, I was like, oh, this is just how the business is.
Yeah.
This is like a almost a school of this is your future.
I had it, too. I had a guy, I've told it here before, too, but long story short, offered me some work for Amistad he was working on, and, you know, he said...
He wanted you to be on the boat.
He said he wanted me to be on his motherfucking boat.
Hello!
Some Sandler back... I still get Sandler today. A lot of people still say Sandler, but it was like some Sandler backup work or stand-in work. It was stand-in backup. I'm Adam Sandler's backup. Stand-in work, but that's all it was. Like, I just want to fuck you, you know? And it came out eventually while we were drinking. I was like, oh, okay, you know?
What'd
and
you
that
say?
Was it, like... He was straight up wanted to fuck. We went back to his place because that's where I had my car, And he was trying to get me to, he put on gay porn, was telling me a nut's a nut. He really wanted to suck my dick. If I sucked his, or if he sucked my dick, he'd give me these jobs. I would have been on Amistad. I'd have been on a Spielberg film.
You didn't want it bad enough.
I didn't, sure as fuck did not want it bad enough. No, I told him, you know, I was going to beat his ass in his own home, and he paid for my, I actually didn't have my car. That took a cab from there. Yeah, he paid for the cab, and I left.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really think about it for so long, and then when all this stuff started happening, I'm like, you know, it probably happens just as much to dudes.
To everybody. I mean, way more to women, obviously, but it's, I mean, you're not. I don't know if every single person, I don't know if any one person is exempt from it in this entire industry. No.
So on Sunday nights in Culver City, I used to play hockey with this wild group of dudes. It was almost like my agent buddies, but like a lower level. Like we had O.J. Simpson's mailman, and
everybody's like adjacent.
Yeah.
Rocky, I forget his last name, but he was the black guitar player in Suicidal Tendencies. And he had like half of a finger missing, and he was like this amazing guitar player. So that was the level of people. It was like,
I wish they never shut that rink down.
Yeah, it was great. But we would basically
Van Nuys.
No,
Culver Sepulveda. City. Culver City. Oh, that one on the rink,
yeah.
Right there. Yeah, yeah, it's still there. I pass it a lot. Yeah,
oh, is it operational?
No, I don't think it's
a storage facility for some like furniture.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. But that's where the Kings used to practice.
Right. Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah.
And then Gretzky came here, and they got, like, this killer rank in the Valley. But we would go there Sunday nights to play hockey, and one of these guys said, hey, I got an audition tomorrow. You want to go with me? I'm like, audition for what? And they're like, Pepsi commercial. Just go with me and hang out. And then he looked like a smaller version of Wayne Gretzky. So I'm like, yeah, that'll be fun. So I go to the audition with him, and it was a hockey commercial for Pepsi. And
was it a Gretzky commercial?
No. It was just they needed hockey players. So and everyone has – this is back when people brought headshots to auditions.
Every time.
And everyone had their modeling books and whatever, because I guess they wanted good-looking guys. And so the audition's finishing up, and the guy comes in and goes, do you want to audition? I'm like, I don't have anything. He's like, I just come in. So I go in there. It's a typical slate, state your name. And they're like, what's your hockey experience? I'm like, why? He's like, well, you have to, you're going to be playing a pro hockey team and everyone needs to skate. I'm like, oh, I played for the Binghamton Rangers.
You told him you've currently played for him?
And he thought I was bullshitting. So, like, who was the coach? I'm like, Robbie Fatorik. You know, because I
was. Buddy's dad, P.S.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I've met Robbie. I've stayed at his summer home. My buddy Sam, I went to college with Sam, who's still a hockey player. And yeah, Robbie Fatorik.
He's like, he was known in the NHL for wearing the cardigan sweaters and
the Hall of Fame, baby. Yeah, American good, Hockey Hall of Fame.
Good player.
AHL. Skipjacks play.
So he was very impressed. He's like, oh, wow. Who else was on the team? And I'm like, oh, Ed Kostelic and Ed Hospodar played for a little bit. I knew my I'm
you
like
knew your shit.
Clearly.
I'm like Rain Man with hockey. He's like, so, all right, cool, thanks, man. We'll be in touch. And then I get the call like the next day. You're the lead.
The fucking lead.
Like, what?
And how? What was your hockey skill at the time?
None.
Oh, you didn't play?
Not really.
Well, I mean, you were playing with those guys, but they were just like pickup games.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
but you could skate. Could you skate backwards?
Not really.
No.
I got so nervous that week. I took ice skating lessons.
He's out there taking lessons.
And I couldn't stop. I couldn't barely skate backwards. And my instructor, Gary Visconti, it's just weird.
You're not going to believe this.
Right now. Gary! Get your ass in here.
Those guys are about as straight as a circle. So he's like, Earl.
Like Kareem's house.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, it's like, Earl, you skate like Mick Jagger walks.
He said that.
So I get to the commercial shoot, which is at the Sepulveda Ice Rink, as it would have it. And it was clear from the second I skated on the ice, I did not play for the Binghamton Whalers.
And was he there?
Oh, yeah. It was too late. They had to use me. So they basically, my buddy who said come to the audition, he didn't get it. Mm-hmm. It's a cold business. Yeah,
right. He should have got it.
Oh, he definitely should have gotten over me. They're like, well, what we're going to do is we're going to...
Well, was he pissed?
I don't think he was happy, to be honest with you. But the whole point of the commercial... So they had me do one stunt where they dump the puck in the corner. I go in to get it, and the biggest guy bends over like a hip check, and I flip over him. And the guy, like, dude, I know you're not a pro hockey player. Just do what I tell you, and it'll work. And it's a great stunt. I do a backflip over, land on my ass. I mean, I really pulled it together. And then in the commercial, we're all in the locker room, and he's giving us like the rah-rah speech. Come on, guys, we got to win this game. And he's passing out the soda to everyone, and I take a big swig of it, and it's Coke.
Not Pepsi?
Yeah, but that's the whole point. That's why we were losing, because gotcha. We were drinking Coke. And I'm like,
I see.
But Coach, this ain't Pepsi. And then they give us Pepsi, and we become like, you know, the fucking 80s Edmonton Oilers. And then I got my next audition, because the producer loved me so much. So I booked
the guy you lied to loved you? How about that?
Because he just loved me. You know, I'm easy to work with to this day. It's why I get most of the gigs I get. It's like, people know I'll show up, I'll be quiet. I don't have any enemies for the most part. A couple of people on Roast Battle I could do it without, but I'll have to come back for that episode. Only built the fucking show. But anyway, he's like, well, you want to do a United Airlines commercial? I'm like, sure. So it's a commercial where I'm playing an NFL player but traveling on a train in the 50s. And then the end is Mike Singletary on like a Concorde. Like, so it's like, this is how far the advancements in travel. So, you know, I thought, wow, this is an easy business. I'm 2 for 2.
You're killing it, dude.
I mean, like, it's unheard. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone booking their first 2 gigs.
No.
And then literally I went 15 years without getting a call back.
15 years.
Without getting a call back, right. Let alone a gig.
Right.
And then I was like, wow, this is tougher than I thought.
Yep.
And it's still to this day like that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I auditioned for like it being an 80s rocker fan and don't get it. I'm like, that's all I do.
Right. Yeah. That's
my life.
That's like, I was at Rat in Costa Mesa. You're telling me I can't be an 80s rocker fan?
What are the forum stories? You used to go to the hockey game. So what you said when Gretzky came, they went moved all the way out to the Valley?
Well, their practice rink was in North Hills. It was called Isoplex.
Because Gretzky lived out that way, yeah. Too. He was like...
He lived on Lake Sherwood.
Yeah, yeah. I know where he was.
So...
Fetorik was coaching the Kings then, too.
I don't know if he was.
He coached Gretzky, dude.
You sure on that?
For Bruce McNall.
Who lived in my building at the end of his tenure.
Really?
Well, he was so broke. Now, I lived in the Century City building with Adler and Faye Ray, the King Kong girl. It was the saddest thing I've ever seen. Bruce McNall pulls up in this beat up, I think it was a Ford Explorer Expedition. It just gets out looking so disheveled. This is when he'd just gotten out of jail. And it's like, dude, you used to own the Kings, man.
Yeah.
You brought Gretzky here and saved hockey. Because when Gretzky came here, ice rinks were popping up like Starbucks. It's like, it was just, I mean, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, the Kings were popular in the 80s, but unfortunately for them, it was like the Showtime Lakers.
Yeah.
So, like, the Kings had, like, Marcel Dion and Dave Taylor and Charlie Simmer and all these great players. But, you know, it's like, that ain't Magic and Kareem and Bob McAdoo.
Yeah.
But I would still go to the King games because they were great. You could literally buy a ticket for $5, sit in the colonnade for a period, and then literally move down to the glass.
Yeah.
And, jeez. But then Gretzky came and that...
That changed, yeah.
But the Forum Club was a freak scene. I mean, it was... Like the bar in Star Wars of just every fucking horny freaker in the world. And, you know, I was pretty desperate back then to get laid. So I thought, what can I do that'll give me an edge? It's kind of how I roast battle. I look for the edge psychologically. Because no one was getting laid in there unless you were a king. You had Lance, Jerry Buss's pimp, you know, just picking off all the girls, and he'd bring all these twats in there. And it's like, wait a minute. If I put on a suit, and about 3 or 4 minutes left in the game, I go down to the washroom, and I would take a hair gel packet, like a travel size. I would go to like Rite Aid and just buy these little travel sized hair gel packets.
LA Looks.
Yeah. LA Looks Spike. The yeah. spike, yeah. the pink spiky yeah. thing. And I'd wait for the final buzzer to blow. It was just like a bullhorn at that time. And I'd put water through my hair and I'd put the hair gel in like I had just gotten out of the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And I would literally look at my watch and give myself 10 minutes. And then I'd put on the suit and I'd blend in with the Kings. And I would wear obnoxious suits, like a purple, because like hockey players wear like these, you know, it's not quite on the NBA level of yeah. like, you know, the fedoras and stuff, but like they'd wear some pretty outrageous suits and I'd get in every single time.
Really?
And these girls would be like, hey, who are you? And I'm like, well, you know, you got to know your lies. So don't say you're on the current roster. Say you're on the New Haven Nighthawks, which was the Kings farm team. So it's believable. Of course, I was such an idiot. I would say my name was Rudy Poshek, who played on the Rangers. And I got laid more times with that scheme.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, girls, you know, they're not going to. This is basically right around the internet. So it's like, as a kid, I thought Kamala, the Ugandan giant, was from Uganda.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
I couldn't look it up.
Right.
Now you can find out he's from Philadelphia.
Right.
Same difference. I mean, who the hell we can? So, you know, they couldn't look up Rudy Poshek. Wait a minute, you play in the Rangers. And just, you know, it's like, had a lot of fun back then.
But were you going other, or were you actually having sex at the Forum?
I had, I did have that one time. Got a few hand jobs in the Forum Club. And I think the Kings at that point were in on my scheme, but they were pretty cool. Like, you know, because I'd be like the only guy that they didn't know in the room. And I'd be in a suit, and they, you know, the hair just wet like a, and like Gary Shuchuk, who played on the Kings, came up to me one night. And was like, "Dude, I don't know who you are, but I like your style."
That's hilarious, dude.
and then, but the scam kind of ran its course because, you know, then when the Lakers would play, I'd go in there and do the same scheme. And these girls, the same girls would be in there going, well, the Kings are in Toronto tonight. What are you doing here? I'd be like, bah, 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 bah. I got to go return some videotapes.
That's great, dude.
I mean, it's embarrassing how desperate. Now I'm going to the Comedy Store. If a girl's talking to me, I'm like Johnny Casual. Yeah, man, you know, maybe we'll hang out. Cool. But, you know, back then I was just desperate, to be honest. Yeah.
Hey. Who hasn't been?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's embarrassing now, but, you know, it's just a different era, you know, like the things I would say to get laid, you know. I mean, I told one girl once I was the guitar player from Rat, Warren DeMartini.
Did it work?
At Fantasy Island, the strip club on
Pico. Yeah, I know that one, yeah.
So nasty there. It's like,
got a fucking like bird lookout yeah. on the thing.
Yeah. What is that?
Well, it used to be Kelbo's Polynesian restaurant, so it was like a Polynesian theme.
Oh, so they just never yeah. did anything.
So it's like that was supposed to be like the lighthouse yeah, of right. the whatever.
The lookout.
So I told this stripper I was the guitar player in Rat, and you know he's like 12, 15 years older than me, so the storyline didn't really match because my age. She's like, well, how old were you when you were in Rat? I'm like, oh, I was 13. I was a child prodigy.
My God.
And I look about as much like Warren DeMartini as you do Dikembe Mutombo.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, she bought it for a couple nights. Hello.
Hello.
Well, look, buddy, we got to get you out of here. You got a spot at the store.
Dude, thanks so much, man.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you for coming
down.
On and doing this.
Dude. Humbled and honored. I mean,
that's very kind of you. We're glad to have you on.
But you guys, if I could just say this,
mm-hmm.
LA comedy is a real jungle.
Mm-hmm.
Axel was right. He should do a song called Welcome to the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
But if everyone in LA comedy, and I'm being completely serious, were like you guys, it'd just be the best world to navigate. You guys have always been cool to me.
Thanks, man. Yeah,
oh,
well,
yeah.
You to us.
Thank you, dude. But yeah, like, ditto, brother.
I can't help you guys. Like, you know, it's like, I just wish everyone were like you guys.
Oh, thanks, man. That's sweet. Do you want to, you know, plug your Twitter and Instagram?
Your
and,
show, your
podcast?
You say it all.
Yeah, yeah. yeah just at Earl Skakel on all social media, E-A-R-L-S-K-A-K-E-L. And I'm in The Jellies, which is on Adult Swim. I'm dying up here on Showtime. Hopefully we get a season three. But the show people ask me about the most is still Roast Battle. So who knows if I'll be in that, you know. I don't have management or representation. So I'm like turning into the ultimate warrior where I'm just this bitter guy because I get fucked at every turn. But the warrior was the only one who stood up for himself.
That's right.
That's true.
But like everyone thought he was crazy and hard to work with, but he was like the only one to say to Vince McMahon right before SummerSlam, I'm not going out there unless I get $1 million more. And he stood up for himself because he knew what he was worth.
He did that. He did that right before he walked out.
So he was literally, they were arguing in the gorilla position, where they stand before they go out. And he's like, and it was the main event. I think he was battling like Sid Vicious. And he's like, I want $1 million, or I'm not going out there right now. And your pay-per-view numbers, you're fucked. And so he had to give him $1 million, and then he fired him the next day.
But oh, he did.
He got that million.
There you go.
And that's how I am.
He fired the warrior?
Yeah. This is what I need, Roast Battle, or I'm not walking out.
You heard it! Well, thanks for coming, buddy. As always, jlarsoncomedy.com, jlarsoncomedy on all social media.
RyanSickler.com, RyanSickler on all social media. We'll talk to y'all next Tuesday.